arm scattered the others to the opposite side of the pit, while she was desperately seeking the feel of her magic. He told them they could decide among themselves who went next. And then he turned to her. He started unbuckling his pants. Kaelin wildly searched her mind for a stall. She needed time to figure out how to find her power. How about a kiss first?
I don't need no kiss, he growled. Open your legs like before, I like that.
Well, it's just that a kiss from a big, handsome man gets a woman randy to please him. He paused a moment, then put his right arm around her shoulders and slammed her to the floor beside him.
You better get randy real quick before I lose my patience.
I promise. Just kiss me a bit first. Tyler pressed his lips to hers. She gasped when his other hand suddenly went up between her legs, but this time with forceful insistence instead of a gentle touch like before. He thought the gasp was cooperation and pressed his lips harder to hers. She wrapped her arms around his neck. The smell of him almost made her sick. Kaelin tried to concentrate on finding the calm, as she always had before when she used her power. She could not find the place. She desperately sought the swell of magic but found nothing. Failure brought tears of frustration. Tyler's breathing was becoming emphatic. He was pressing so hard that it was hurting her lips against her teeth. She pretended to savor it. It was almost impossible to concentrate with the terror of what his hand was doing between her legs, but she dared not stop him. Panic rose in her throat as she forced herself to hold her legs open for him. Her heels pressed harder to the floor, and her feet trembled in her boots. Kaelin reprimanded herself. She was the mother confessor. She had used her power countless times. She tried again, but nothing happened. Her memory of the young women in Ebenicia was keeping her from being able to focus. And then she thought of Richard. She almost wailed with longing for him. If she was ever to have a chance of seeing Richard again, she had to use her magic. She had to be strong. She had to do it for him. Nothing happened. She realized she was whimpering in frustration against Tyler's mouth. He took it for passion. His face pulled back a few inches.
Spread your legs more, so they can all see how much a fancy lady wants, Tyler.
She submissively drew her heels closer to herself and spread her knees wider. The men all hooted their approval. She could feel her ears burning. She remembered what Ranson had said about taking her dignity. Tyler pressed his lips back to hers. Tears seeped from the corners of her eyes. It wasn't working. She couldn't find her power, if it was even there. She had no choice. She was going to have to follow through with what she had offered the men. Failure to do so now would only bring her a beating on top of it. There was no escape. She thought about the poor women in Ebenicia. That was what was going to happen to her. It was hopeless. In her mind, she gave up. She surrendered to what was going to happen. Something her father had told her sprang to the front of her mind. If you ever give up, Kaelin, you are lost. Fight with every breath, with the last if you must, but don't ever give up. Not ever. Don't hand them a victory. Fight with what you have to the last breath. She wasn't doing that. She was giving up. Tyler sat up.
Enough kissing. You're ready.
She had run out of time. She wondered if Richard would hate her for this. No. He would know she had no choice. He would be disappointed only if she felt shame for being a victim. He had suffered unimaginable pain before Denna had done what she wanted. He knew what it meant to be helpless. She did not blame him for what was forced on him. He would not blame her. He would comfort her. If it didn't work with this man, she told herself, then maybe it would work with the next. She would keep trying with each. She would not give up. She would keep trying to find her power with each.
Keep your legs open,
Tyler growled as he undid his trousers. She realized she had unconsciously put her knees together. She obediently spread them again as a tear rolled down the side of her face.
Dear spirits, she prayed. Help me.
No. The good spirits had never helped her before. They had never come to her aid before, despite her efforts on their behalf, despite her pleas. They would not come now. To the keeper with the worthless good spirits. Don't cry, girl, she told herself. Fight them with your last breath if need be. Please, she said, just one more kiss.
You had enough kissing. Time to do as you said. Time for me now.
Kaylin pulled her heels up against herself, spread her legs as wide as she could, and wiggled her bottom as he leered. Please, your kisses are the best I've ever had. Just one more, please. She watched his chest heave. Then I'll please you like no woman ever has. Just one more kiss. He flopped down on her between her legs. His weight drove the wind from her lungs.
One more, and then you deliver.
He crushed his whiskered face to hers. He was out of control. His lips were cutting hers against her teeth. She tried to ignore the burning heat of him pressing painfully against her. Kaylin slapped her hands to the side of his muscular neck. Her lungs burned for air. This was her last chance, her last breath. Fight with it, she told herself. Fight for Richard. As she had done countless times, she released her restraint, although she felt no power pushing against it. It was like leaping into a dark, bottomless pit. There was thunder, but no sound. The violent jolt to the air brought down a shower of stone dust. The men all cried out with the pain of being so close when her power was released. Kaylin almost screamed with joy. She could feel the magic in her middle again. It was weak from having just been used, but she could feel it again. It was back. It had never left. Ranson had used magic to make her believe a lie. Tyler's jaw had gone slack as he pulled back, looking down into her eyes.
Mistress, he whispered, command me.
The other men were scrambling toward them. Protect me. Heads cracked against the walls, sending splashes of blood across the stone. Tyler snapped a man's arm. Wails of pain echoed around the room. There was a furious battle for a few minutes until Kaylin was able to direct Tyler in accomplishing what she wanted, a truce. She didn't want him to fight all the men. If they succeeded in getting the better of him, then she was finished. She wanted them separated, the men keeping their distance, and Tyler guarding her. That was her best chance of surviving until she could recover her power. She screamed orders to the men as well as Tyler. Six were left standing, in fighting form, and enraged. One was writhing on the ground, screaming in pain, a shattered bone jutting from his forearm. And the other four, including the one she had kicked in the face, were not moving. Kaylin told the men that she would keep Tyler at bay as long as they stayed in their corner. Reluctantly, they moved to the opposite side, dragging the others with them. The screams kept them convinced that they should bide their time before taking on the big man with the wild eyes. She made them throw her small clothes, under threat of sending Tyler to get them. Kaylin sat in the corner, her back against the wall. Tyler stood before her in a half-crouch, dancing on the balls of his feet, his arms out and ready. The men watched as they rested against the other wall. Kaylin knew that this uneasy truce could not go on for days. Sooner or later, Tyler would run out of energy. Then they would have him. Then they would have her. The men knew that, too. Chapter 60 The night wore on, with the men watching and Tyler guarding her. She caught a few moments of uneasy sleep from time to time. Kaylin had no idea what time it was, but she judged it to be between the middle of the night and close to dawn. Though she was afraid, and knew that they were going to come to behead her sooner or later, she felt joy that her power was back, and that she had beaten them with that much of it. The good spirits hadn't helped her. She had helped herself. She felt self-satisfaction at what she had done. She had not given up. and the good spirits had left her to it, as they always did. Kaylin was furious with the good spirits. Though she had lived her whole life to see their ideals upheld, they never once helped her. Well, no more. She was finished with the good spirits, as she was finished with trying to help the ungrateful people of the Midlands. What had it gotten her? She had learned in the council chambers what it had gotten her. It had gotten her the undying hatred of her people. The very people she fought for thought she harmed children. People didn't like confessors and were afraid of them for a variety of reasons. But she had been stunned to learn what people really believed about her. From now on, she was going to worry about herself, her friends, and Richard, and to the keeper with the rest of them. He could have them all. She was through with it all. She was the mother confessor no longer. She was Kaylin. The torch sputtered out, plunging the pit into blackness.
"Thank you again, good spirits!"
she screamed at the top of her lungs. Her words echoed around the pit.
"To the keeper with you!"
The men set upon Tyler in the dark. Kaylin didn't know what was happening. She could hear grunts and screams and thuds. She heard an echoing, banging sound. She couldn't understand what it was. And then she heard a muffled voice calling out her title. The familiar voice was coming from above.
"Chandelin! Chandelin! I'm down here! Open the door!" "Mother Confessor!"
came the voice from beyond the door.
"How do I open the door?"
Kaylin let out a shriek when a hand snatched her ankle and pulled her from her feet. Chandelin called out at the sound of her scream. Tyler grabbed the fingers around her ankle and bent them back until they snapped. The man screamed in the dark.
"Chandelin, you need a key. Use the key." "Key? What is this key?" "Chandelin!"
She shoved a head away from her middle.
"Chandelin, remember when we were in the city with the dead people? Remember the queen's room that was locked? Remember I showed you a key to open the door? Chandelin, one of the guards up there has a ring on his belt. It has the key. Hurry!"
Kaylin recognized Tyler's grunt as he was slammed to the wall. She could hear the bone-jarring blows of his fist. She could hear a metallic noise from above.
"Mother Confessor, it will not turn." "Then it's the wrong one. Try another."
Someone crashed into her, knocking her to the floor. She clawed at his eyes. He punched at her middle. A sudden shaft of light descended into the pit. Tyler saw the man on her and threw him off. A ladder dropped down.
"Tyler, keep them away from the ladder."
Kaylin threw herself onto the ladder and scrambled up. The men piled on Tyler. She heard him groan and then his neck snap. Her foot slipped through a rung when a fist punched her in the back of the calf. Hands grabbed at her ankles. Kaylin kicked the face of the man right behind and then clambered up. He tumbled back, taking the others with him. They charged back up in a rush. Kaylin stretched for the hand extended down. Chandelin clamped onto her wrist and yanked her through the doorway. He stabbed the man right behind her. As the man toppled back, Chandelin slammed the door closed. Panting, she fell into his arms.
"Come, Mother Confessor, we must get out of this place."
There were dead guards everywhere, all killed silently from behind by Chandelin's troga. He held her hand as they ran through the dank, dark halls and up the stairs. She wondered how Chandelin had managed to find his way down here. Someone must have shown him the way. Around a corner, they came to the site of a bloody battle. Bodies were sprawled everywhere. Only one man was standing. Orsk. His great battle axe dripped with gore. Orsk nearly leapt out of his skin with joy when he saw her. She was almost thrilled to see his scarred face.
"I made him wait,"
Chandelin explained as he pulled her through the bloody mess.
"I told him that I would bring you if he waited and guarded this hall."
Chandelin frowned at her. Kaylin realized he was staring at her hair, or what was left of it. He said nothing, though, and she was glad for that. It felt more than strange not to feel the weight of her hair. It was heartbreaking. She had loved her hair. So had Richard. Kaylin bent over and took a war axe from one of the dead guards. With her power not yet recovered, she felt better with the weapon in her hands. Chandelin, dragging Kaelin along by her hand, with Orsk protecting the rear, burst through a door. Directly outside, the captain of the guards had a woman pressed up against the wall. Her arms were wrapped around his neck as she kissed him. His hands were up her dress. As they charged past, and the startled captain looked up, Chandelin drove his long knife into the man's ribs.
"Come," he said to the woman. "We have her."
The woman fell into line with the rest of them as they wound their way up through the palace. Puzzled, Kaelin looked back. The woman in the hooded cloak was the woman who had fainted. Jebra Bevanir.
"What's going on?" Kaelin asked Jebra. "Forgive me, Mother Confessor, for fainting. I had a vision of you being beheaded. It was so horrifying that I fainted. I knew I must help so that the vision would not come true. You told me that you had a friend in the woods. I went and found him."
They all flattened up against a wall and waited for a patrol to pass through an adjoining room. When their echoing footsteps faded, Chandelin turned with a hot look to Jebra.
"What were you doing with that man?"
She blinked in surprise. "He was the captain of the guards. He was making the rounds with a whole detachment. I convinced him to send the guards away for a while. I did the only thing I could think of to keep 50 men from trapping you down there."
Chandelin grumbled that maybe it made sense. As they headed on, Kaelin told Jebra that she had done a brave thing and that she understood what courage it took to do it. Jebra protested that she was no heroine and didn't want to be one. At an intersection with a vaulted corridor, Mistress Sanderholt was waiting. Letting out a cry, Kaelin threw her arms around the woman. Mistress Sanderholt held her bandaged hands out.
"Not now, Mother Confessor. You must escape. This way is clear."
As the others rushed in the direction Mistress Sanderholt indicated, Kaelin went the other way. They all turned and ran after.
"What are you doing?"
Chandelin yelled. "We must escape."
"I have to get something from my room."
"What could be more important than escaping?"
"Grandfather's knife," she said as she ran.
When they realized they were not going to be able to change her mind, they all followed after as she led them up through the labyrinth of smaller and less frequently patrolled halls. Several times they did encounter guards. Orsk fiercely hacked them to pieces when they charged after her. As she came around a corner at the top of a stairway, a surprised guard spun to her. With all her strength, Kaelin buried her axe in the center of his chest. His sword skittered across the floor as he went down on his back. As he thrashed on the floor, Kaelin put a foot against his heaving stomach and tried to pull the axe out. Bubbles of air and blood frothed forth, but the axe was stuck tight in his breastbone, so she scooped up his Celtish sword instead. Chandelin lifted an eyebrow. Before they reached her room, she had cause to use the sword, and with similar, deadly effect. The others waited in the outer room, recovering their wind, while she rushed into her bedroom. She froze when she saw her blue wedding dress. She swept it up and held it to her breast. That was what she had come for. She didn't want to leave it. She was never returning to this place. Kaelin shed a tear on the dress, rolled it into a tight bundle, and stuffed it in her pack. All the other clothes from her pack were cleaned, too, and laid out for her. She stuffed them in the pack after strapping the bone knife around her left arm. She threw the mantle around her shoulders. Hurriedly, she strung the bow. She swept through the outer room, her pack and quiver on her back, and her bow on her shoulder. She had everything she wanted, everything that meant anything to her. She paused a moment, looking at her room for the last time as she idly turned the round bone on her necklace and then led the others out and down a back way, headed for an outside door. She lost count of how many men Chandelin took out with his troga or knife. When a big guard charged out of a side hall and tried to roll them down, Kaelin ran him through with the sword. The four of them were grim death moving through the palace. The alarm bells rang frantically in the tower. On the landing, leading to the great staircase, Orsk lopped off a guard's head. The body rolled down the stairs, spilling a trail of blood, as if unrolling a red carpet for them. The headless man flopped to a stop against the statue of Magda Cirrus.
the first Mother Confessor. They ran down the stone steps, the sound echoing in the vast chamber. Near the bottom, a sudden stab of pain took Kaylin's feet out from under her. She tumbled down the last few steps. The others shouted and rushed to her, wanting to know how she was hurt. She told them that she had just stumbled. She hadn't stumbled. Kaylin pulled her bow off her shoulder and pointed with it.
Down that hall, all of you! Head down that hall! Turn right at the end. I'll catch up with you. Go!
We're not leaving you, Chandelin insisted.
I said go!
Kaylin stood against the blistering pain in her legs.
Orsk, get them moving now. I'll catch up. I will be displeased with you if you fail to get them out of here.
Orsk raised his axe and growled. The other two backed toward the hall as they pleaded with her. They protested that they had risked their lives to rescue her, and they would not leave her now.
Orsk, get them out of here!
Why?
Chandelin and Jebra yelled together. Kaylin pointed with her bow. Across the great chamber, up in one of the distant arcades, stood a shadowed figure.
Because otherwise he'll kill you.
We must escape. He will kill you too.
If he lives, he will hunt us down with magic and kill us all.
A bolt of yellow lightning arced across the broad room. Stone crashed down, nearly covering the opening where the others stood. Kaylin drew one of Chandelin's flat-bladed man-killer arrows from her quiver.
Mother Confessor! Chandelin screamed. You cannot make that shot! I could not make that shot! You must run!
She didn't tell them that the wizard was sending slashing shards of pain through her, and she couldn't run. It was all she could do just to stand.
Orsk, get them out, now, I'll catch up.
Another bolt of lightning sent stone flying everywhere and the three of them running down the hall, Orsk pushing them along. Kaylin put a knee to the floor to steady herself as she knocked the arrow. She drew the string to her cheek. The blade of the arrow was horizontal in her line of sight. She could hardly see Ranson, he was so far away, and the pain was blurring her vision. But she could hear him laugh as he sent violent splinters of magic ripping through her. It sounded like Darken Rall's laugh. She bit the inside of her cheek against the pain, against the scream trying to fight its way out. She couldn't hold back the clipped whimpers.
"An archer, Mother Confessor?"
he called from the distance. His laughter echoed off the stone around her.
Your freedom was brief, Mother Confessor. I hope it was worth it to you. You will spend a good long time in the pit thinking about it.
He was too far away. She had never made a shot from this far. Richard had. She had seen him do it.
Please, Richard, help me. Show me how, like you did that day. Help me.
Stone vines tore from the panel next to her and whipped around her middle. Squeezing. The shearing pain made her shriek. She brought up the bow again. With her last breath, if need be, she told herself. Her arm shook. She could hardly see the wizard. He was too far away. The vines held her tight. She couldn't run, even if she wanted to.
Help me, Richard!
Another brutal wave of pain seared up her legs and through her insides. Burning tears ran down her cheeks as she shuddered and gasped. She couldn't hold the bow up. Lightning arced around the great staircase. The sound was deafening. Stone chips whistled past. Clouds of dust rose as a column collapsed with a crash. She heard Richard's words in her mind. You have to be able to shoot no matter what is happening. Just you and the target, that's all there is. Nothing else matters. You have to be able to block everything else out. You can't think about how afraid you are or what will happen if you miss. You have to be able to make the shot under pressure. She remembered how he had whispered to her, whispered for her to call the target. With a jolt, the target came to her, as if the wizard were standing right in front of her. She could see the flashes of liquid light jumping from his fingertips. She could see her target, the bump in his throat bobbing up and down as he laughed. She let her breath flow out, as Richard had taught her. The arrow found the notch in the air. as gentle as a baby's breath. The arrow left the bow. She saw the feathers clear the bow. She saw the string hit her wrist. The stone vine wrapped around her throat. She kept her eyes on the target. She watched the feathers of the arrow as it flew. The pain tearing her insides rose with his laughter. The wizard's laughter cut off abruptly. Kaelin heard the thunk of the blade hitting his throat. When the stone vine suddenly dropped away, she fell forward on her hands and knees, tears dripping from her face as she waited for the pain to melt away. It went with merciful swiftness. Kaelin staggered to her feet.
"To the keeper with you two, Wizard Neville Ranson!"
There was an ear-splitting crack, like a lightning strike. But instead of a flash of light, a ripple of total darkness swept across the room. Bumps rippled up her arms. The lamps flickered back on. Kaelin knew. The keeper had indeed taken Wizard Neville Ranson. She heard a grunt and turned just in time to see a guard leaping down the steps toward her. Kaelin ducked and came up under him as he landed. She used his momentum to loft him over the railing, into the well below. He snatched at her as he went over, but his fingers caught only her necklace. It tore from her and went down with him. Kaelin bent over the railing, seeing him smack the stone floor. Three flights down. She saw the necklace tumble from his hand when he hit and slide across the floor.
"Curse the good spirits," she growled.
Kaelin started for the stairs to retrieve her bone necklace, but skidded to a stop and looked up at the sound of boots on stone. More guards were coming. She hesitated for a moment, looking down, and then ran for the hallway instead. The spirits hadn't helped her. What good was a necklace going to do? It wasn't worth her life. Kaelin caught the others as they made the outside doors. They all sighed with relief to see her and to hear that the wizard wouldn't be coming after them. Kaelin led as they ran out into the night. The four of them raced down the expanse of steps to the relentless sound of the alarm bells behind. She headed south, the shortest distance to the woods. A breathless Jebra caught her arm, dragging her to a stop.
"Mother Confessor!"
"I am not the Mother Confessor any longer. I am Kaelin."
"Kaelin, then, but you must listen to me. You cannot run away."
Kaelin turned back to the path through the courtyard.
"I'm through with this place. Zed needs you."
Kaelin spun back.
"Zed? You know Zed? Where is he?"
Jebra gulped air.
"Zed sent me to Aedendril. The day after you left Dahara, he said he had to go get a woman named Addie, and then he would come to the Wizard's Keep. He sent me here to help you and Richard, and have you wait. Zed needs you."
Kaelin gripped Jebra's shoulders.
"I need Zed. I need him very badly." "Then you must let me help you. You must not leave. They will expect you to run and will search the countryside. They will not expect you to remain in Aedendril."
"Remain? Stay in Aedendril?" She thought a moment. She was known in Aedendril. No, not exactly. Her long hair was known. People other than counselors, ambassadors, staff, and nobility rarely saw the Mother Confessor up close. And when they did, they mostly stared at her long hair. She no longer had that hair. The thought of her loss made her insides knot up. She hadn't known how much her power and her long hair meant to her until they were gone.
"It might work, Jebra, but where would we hide? Zed gave me gold. No one knows of my involvement in your escape. I will rent rooms and hide you, all of you."
Kaelin considered it a moment, then smiled.
"We could be your servants. A lady like you would have servants."
Jebra shrank back.
"Mother Confessor, I could not do that. I am nothing but a servant myself. Zed made me pretend to be a lady, but I could not pretend that. You are a true lady."
"Being a servant does not make you less than me. We all can be only who we are, no more, no less." Kaelin started them all off again toward a part of Aedendril with quiet, secluded, and exclusive inns. "And it is startling to learn what you can do when you have to. We will do what we must. But if you keep calling me Mother Confessor, you are going to get us all killed."
I will do my best, Kaelin. All I know is that we must wait until Zed returns to Adendrill.
She tugged insistently on Kaelin's sleeve. Mother Confessor, where is Richard? It is vital.
Her voice lowered with unease.
No slight intended, and I pray none is taken, but it is Richard that is important. Zed needs Richard.
That is why I need Zed, Kaelin said.
Chapter 61 Richard grabbed an arm of each boy.
Slow down, he said in a low voice. I told you I have to go first.
Kip and Hirsch sighed impatiently. Richard checked around the corner, peeking down the hall, and then pushed the two boys up against the wall. Frogs kicked in their pockets.
This is serious. I picked you two because I know you're the best. Now, you do as I told you, the way we planned it. Stay here with your backs to this wall and count to 50. You don't so much as peep around the corner until you get to 50. I'm depending on you to do it right.
They grinned.
We're your man, Kip said. We'll get them out of there.
Richard squatted and put a finger close to each face in turn.
This is serious business. This isn't just some game. This time you could get in real trouble. Are you sure you want to do this?
Kip put his hands in his pockets, feeling the frogs.
You came to the right men. We can do it. We want to do it, Richard.
They were excited because they had never made it past the guards before. This was uncharted territory for their specialty. Richard knew they didn't appreciate the danger involved, and he hated to have to use them in this manner. But it was the only thing he could think of.
All right, then. Start counting.
Richard rounded the corner and swept down the hall, his Mrizwith cape billowing open. When he reached the proper door, he stood against the white marble wall opposite the double doors and drew the hood up. He pulled the cape closed and concentrated on the marble behind him. He stood motionless. The boys burst around the corner, yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs as they ran down the hall. They stopped in front of the double doors, looking both ways. They didn't see him standing behind them, and he knew they were wondering where he was hiding. As they had been instructed, they threw the doors open and, giggling with excitement, began pulling frogs from their pockets and pitching them into the room. The two sisters were frozen in surprise for only an instant. Richard watched as both came flying around their desks, one snatching up a rod. The boys heaved their last frogs with a squeal and raced away in opposite directions, shouting taunts of,
"Can't catch us! Can't catch us!"
Sisters Eulicia and Fenella slid to a stop on the polished marble floor outside the doors. They almost slid right into him and were only inches away. Richard held his breath. The sisters saw the boys make the turns at opposite ends of the hall. They threw their hands out. Pictures crashed to the floor as flashes of shimmering light knocked them from the walls at the end, but they missed the boys. Growling in anger, the sisters parted, one dashing after each boy. Richard waited until they had turned the corner, and then he stepped away from the wall, letting his concentration relax, letting the cape return to black. He wondered what it would look like if someone were to see it happen, to see a person seem to materialize out of the air. The outer room was empty. Before the door, between the desks, the air seemed to sparkle and hum. Experimentally, Richard put his hand into it. The air felt thick, but it seemed to have no harmful effect. He pressed himself through the sparkles and went through the door beyond. The room inside, not quite as large as his own outer room, was dimly lit and paneled in rich, dark wood. In the center sat a heavy walnut table piled with papers and books and three candles. Down the length to each side were floor-to-ceiling bookshelves crammed full of disheveled books and a few other odd objects. An old woman, one of the cleaning staff in a heavy, dark gray work dress, was standing on a stool dusting a top bookshelf. She turned with surprise as he came to a halt. She glanced to the door, and then back to him.
How did you?
I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't mean to startle you. I just came to see the prelate. Is she about? The woman squatted, her foot searching for the floor. Richard gave her his hand. She smiled her appreciation as she brushed a wisp of graying hair back from her face.
Most of it was drawn into a loose knot at the back of her head. Once she was standing on the floor, the top of her head only came up to the lower tip of his breastbone. Her body was on the wide side, as if she had once been taller, and a giant had put his hand on the top of her head and squashed her down a good foot. She looked up, giving him a curious frown.
"Did sisters Yulisha and Fenella let you come in?"
"No," Richard said as he looked about the comfortably cluttered room. "They stepped out."
"But they would have left a shield."
"Ma'am, I must speak to the prelate." Across the room, Richard saw doors to a courtyard standing open. "Is she about?"
"Do you have an appointment?" she asked in a quiet, gentle voice.
"No," he admitted. "I've been trying to get one for days. Those two wouldn't cooperate, so I made my own appointment." She put a finger to her lower lip.
"I see. But you must have an appointment. Those are the rules. I'm sorry."
Richard started for the open doors. He was getting impatient, but kept his voice calm, as he didn't want to frighten the old maidservant. "Look, ma'am, I must see the prelate, or we are all going to have an appointment with the keeper himself." Her eyebrows lifted in wonder.
"Really?"
She clicked her tongue.
"The keeper it is. My, my, my."
Richard stopped suddenly. He winced and let out a groan. He turned on his heel. "You're the prelate, aren't you?" An impish grin came to her face, her eyes twinkling with it.
"Yes, Richard, I guess I am."
"You know who I am?" She chuckled.
"Oh, yes, I know."
Richard sighed. "So you're the one who runs this place?" She laughed louder.
"As I hear it told, you seem to be running it now. Been here hardly a month, and you have half the palace round around your will. I've been thinking about asking for an appointment to see you."
Richard gave her a friendly scowl. "I would have granted it."
"I've been looking forward to meeting you."
She patted his arm. "From now on, you may come to see me whenever you wish." "Then why wouldn't you let me in before?" She folded her hands together beneath her ample, rounded breasts.
"A test, my boy, a test."
She smiled up at him.
"I am impressed. I expected it to take you another 6 or 8 months yet."
The door burst open. Richard was jerked from his feet, yanked back by his collar, and smacked up against the wall. He was stuck tight, the wind knocked from his lungs. Two irate sisters stood just inside the doorway with their fists on their hips.
"Now, now," the prelate said. "Stop that, you two. Let the boy down."
Richard thumped to the ground, glaring at the two sisters. "I am the one who talked those two boys into doing as they did. What they did is my fault. If there is any revenge, it had better be against me and not them. If you harm them, you will answer to me." One of the sisters took a step toward him. "Their punishment has already been ordered. This time, for once, they will learn a lesson." She angrily pointed the stout rod at him. "You are going to have your own punishment to worry about."
"Yes, Sister Yulisha," the prelate said. "I think punishment is in order."
The sister gave Richard a self-satisfied smile.
"Yours," the prelate said.
Sister Yulisha gaped.
"Prelate Annalena?"
"Did I not give you specific instructions that Richard was not to be allowed in here?"
The two sisters straightened.
"Yes, Prelate Annalena, and here he is standing in my office."
Sister Yulisha pointed at the door.
"But we left a shield. He could not..." "Oh, could not?"
The sister's hand dropped at seeing the prelate's wrinkled brow.
"Seems I see him standing here, do I not, sisters?"
"Yes, Prelate Annalena," the two said as one.
"And so now your idea is to reward your own failure by going back to your posts, as if nothing had happened, and punish their success?"
The prelate clicked her tongue.
"You two will take the punishment you have ordered for the two boys."
The sisters blanched.
"But, prelate,"
the second whispered,
"you can't have that done to a sister."
"Really, Sister Fenella? What did you order for the boys?"
"To have their bottoms strapped publicly tomorrow morning after breakfast."
"That sounds fair. You two will take their place."
"But, prelate,"
Sister Yulisha whispered in astonishment,
"we are sisters of the light. That would be humiliating."
"Learning humility never harmed anyone. We are all humble before the Creator. For your failure, you will be strapped in their place."
Sister Yulisha stiffened.
"And if we fail to submit, Prelate Annalena?"
The prelate smiled.
then you would be telling me that you no longer deserve to be trusted, and further, that you no longer wish to be Sisters of the Light.
They both bowed. When the door closed behind them, Richard lifted an eyebrow to the prelate.
I hope never to get on your wrong side, Prelate Annalena.
She chuckled. Please call me Anne. That is what my old acquaintances call me.
I'd be honored to call you Anne, Prelate, but I'm not an old acquaintance.
You think not? She smiled. My, what a knowledgeable boy. Well, no matter. Call me Anne anyway. Do you know why I punished them? Because you took responsibility for your actions. They did not recognize the importance of that. You are learning to be a wizard.
What do you mean?
You knew it was dangerous to cross those two, did you not?
Richard nodded.
Yet you used those boys knowing that it was a possibility they could be hurt.
Yes, but I had to do it. It's that important. And it was the only thing I could think of.
The burden of a wizard. That's what it's called. Using people. A wise wizard understands that he cannot do everything himself, and that if the matter is important enough, he must use other people to accomplish what must be done, even if it is to cost those other people their lives. It's a rare ability, and vital to being a good wizard. Perhaps to being a prelate, too.
And it's urgent. I must speak with you.
Urgent, is it? Well, then, why don't we go for a walk in my garden, and we can talk about this urgent business?
She placed her arm in his and walked him through the open doorway. Outside, in the moonlight, was a grand, expansive courtyard with trees, paths, flower beds, wild areas, and a lovely pond. The beauty of the garden didn't register in Richard's mind. He had hardly been able to eat or sleep since he had had his talk with Warren. If the keeper escaped, he would have everyone, including Kaelin. Richard had to do something.
Anne, there is great trouble in the world. I need your help. I need this collar off so I may go help.
That's what I'm here for, Richard, to help. What is the trouble?
The keeper.
The nameless one, she corrected. What difference does it make? Calling him by his name calls his attention.
Anne, it's just a word. It's the meaning of the word that matters, not an arrangement of letters. Do you think that when you call the keeper the nameless one instead, that he would be fooled into thinking you weren't speaking of him? It's a mistake to assume your enemies are ignorant, and you are clever.
A hearty laugh rose from in her chest.
I have been waiting for a very long time for someone to figure that out.
She paused with him at the edge of the pond, and he asked, What is the pebble in the pond? She gazed out over the water.
You are one, Richard.
You mean there are more than one?
A small stone floated through the air, up into her hand.
Everyone has an effect on others. Some people inspire others to do great things. Some take people into crime with them. Those with the gift affect those around them even more. The stronger the Han, the stronger the effect.
What does that have to do with me? What does that have to do with a pebble in the pond?
You see all the duckweed floating on the surface? Say that's the other people, the world of life. And this pebble is you.
She tossed the stone into the pond.
See what happens? The ripples caused by you affect everyone else. Without you, all those ripples would not have happened.
So they float up and down on the ripples, but the stone sank.
She gave him a humorless grin.
Don't ever forget that.
The answer gave him pause.
I think you invest too much faith in me. You don't know anything about me.
Perhaps more than you think, child. And what is it that concerns you about the keeper?
Something must be done. He's about to escape. One of the boxes of Ordon has been opened. The gateway is open. The Stone of Tears is in this world. I need to do something.
Ah, she smiled as she drifted to a stop. So you, who was just thrown up against a wall by the Han of a mere sister, wants to go off and battle the keeper himself?
But things have happened. Something must be done.
I see you have been talking to Warren. A very bright young man, Warren. He is still young, though. Sometimes he needs direction, guidance. She tipped a branch closer. He studies hard and loves those books. I think he must know every smudge on them.
She was inspecting a flower on the branch. As he watched her in the moonlight, he decided he might have thought himself more clever than he was. Warren, too.
So, what about the keeper? What about the Stone of Tears?
She put her arm back through his and walked him on.
If the gateway is open and the Stone of Tears is in this world, Richard, why does the Keeper not have us? Hmm?
Maybe he's about to swallow us all at any moment.
Ah, so you think that maybe he is busy with his dinner, and when he is finished and wipes his chin clean, he will get around to swallowing the world of the living? So you want to rush off and close the gateway before he picks his napkin from his lap? Is this the way you think the world's beyond ours work? In the same terms as this world?
Richard nervously raked his fingers through his hair. I don't know. I don't know how it all works, but Warren said,
Warren does not know everything. He is but a student. He has a talent for the prophecies, but he has much to learn. Do you know why we keep the prophecies down in the vaults and restrict who may read them? For the very reason we are having this discussion. Because prophecy is dangerous to the untrained mind, and sometimes even to the trained mind. There is more to things than you see, or the Keeper would have us already.
Are you saying we're not in danger?
She smiled a sly smile. We are always in danger, Richard. As long as there is a world of the living, there will be danger. All life is mortal. She patted his arm again. You are an important person, a person in prophecy. But if you go off foolishly, you can cause more harm than good. The Stone of Tears, being in this world, cannot in itself allow the Keeper to escape through the gateway. The stone is a means to that end.
I hope you're right, he said as they walked on. She glanced up.
How is your mother doing?
Richard looked off into the darkness. She died when I was young, in a fire.
I'm sorry, Richard. And your father?
Which one? He muttered.
Your stepfather, George.
Richard cleared his throat. He was killed by Darkin Rall. He darted her a sidelong glance. How do you know my stepfather? She gave him one of those timeless looks that he had seen from others before, from Addie, Shota, Sister Verna, Duchailu, and Kalin.
I'm sorry, Richard. I didn't know he had died. George Cipher was quite a man.
He came to a stop, his flesh a-tingled.
You, he whispered, you are how my father got that book.
He left the statement vague enough that she would have to fill in the details to confirm it. A little of her smile came back.
Afraid to say it out loud? The Book of Counted Shadows, that is the book you are speaking of.
She gestured to a stone bench.
Sit down, Richard, before you fall down.
Richard slumped to the bench. He looked up as she stood before him.
You gave that book to my father? Actually, I helped him get it. You see, Richard, as I told you, you and I are old acquaintances. Of course, the last time I saw you, you were bawling your head off. Only a few months old, you were.
She smiled distantly.
If your mother could see you now, she was bursting with pride over you. She said you were the blessing to balance the curse. You see, Richard, balance is what the world of the living is all about. You are a child of balance. I have much invested in you.
Richard's tongue seemed stuck to the top of his mouth.
Why? Because you are a pebble in the pond.
Her eyes seemed to go out of focus.
Over 3,000 years ago, wizards had subtractive magic. None since has been born with it. We have been hoping, but none until now has come into this life. A few have had the calling, but not the gift of it. You have the gift for both additive and subtractive magic.
Richard shot to his feet.
What? Are you mad? Sit down, Richard.
The quiet power of her voice, her penetrating gaze, her presence, made him sink to the bench. For some reason, she seemed suddenly very big to him. She was the same size as before, but it felt as if she towered over him. Her voice became imposing, too.
Now you listen to me. You are causing me a great deal of trouble. You are like a bull that keeps knocking down fences and trampling the crops. Too much is at stake to have you acting without knowing what you are doing. I know you think you are doing right, but so does the bull. Your problem is lack of knowledge. I intend to give you an education. Though you will not believe some of what I have to tell you, you had better come to accept it, or you will be in that collar a good long time. Because it cannot come off until you accept the truth.
I was told the sisters took the collar off. The look in her eyes made him wish he had kept his mouth closed, or that he could trade places with the two sisters who were to take a public strapping.
Only when you accept yourself, accept your ability, your true power, will it come off. You put the Radahan around your own neck. We don't have the power to take it off until you can help us with your power. The only way you can do that is to learn and to accept who you are. Now, first of all, you must understand about the Keeper and the Creator and the nature of this world. Your problem, the problem most people have, the problem Warren has, is that you try to understand the worlds beyond in terms of this world. Good and evil, the Creator and the Keeper, are chaos divided into two opposing forces. Although each abhors the other, they are interdependent and cannot exist one without the other. They define each other. The struggle, our struggle in this world, is maintaining the balance.
Although Richard kept his mouth shut, he couldn't keep the frown from his face.
From the Creator springs life, the soul of life. It blooms into this world. Without the Keeper, without death, there can be no life. Without death, life would be open-ended. Can you even imagine a world in which no one ever died? Where every child born lives forever? Where every plant that sprouts flourishes? Where every tree lives forever and every seedling sprouts and grows to a tree? What would happen? How could we eat if we could kill no animal or harvest no crop? If it all lived forever and could not die? A never-ending life of gnawing, ravenous hunger. The world of the living would be consumed by chaos and destroy itself forever. Death, the underworld as some call it, is eternal. You think of it in terms of this life. In eternity, time has no meaning, no dimension. To the Keeper, a second or a year has no meaning. It is through those in this world who serve him that the Keeper is given the dimension of time. It is their urgency that drives his struggle, because they understand time. He needs the living if he is to succeed. His promises to those who help him are seductive, and they hunger for his triumph.
So what part do the living play in this?
We divide and define the chaos with order and keep it separated. Light and dark, love and hate, good and evil. We are the balance. We are like the duckweed floating on the surface of the pond. The air above is the Creator, the depths below the Keeper. The souls of the living, which have come down from the Creator, blossom to life in this place, and when they die, they descend to the world of the dead. But that does not mean it is evil. Evil is a judgment we put on it. The Keeper is like the muck at the bottom of the pond. Spirits of the dead reside anywhere from the depths of that chaos and hate near the Keeper to near the living, near the light of the Creator. It is the hope of the living to spend eternity in the warmth of that light. It is we, the living, who separate and define the worlds to each side of life. Magic is the element that gives this world the power to do that. Magic is the balance point. The Keeper would like to swallow the world of the living to triumph. To do that, he must eliminate magic, but at the same time, in order to triumph, he must use magic to tip the balance.
Richard struggled to keep his head above the murky waters of confusion. And wizards have the power to influence this balance? She was still leaning over him. She held up a finger.
Yes, you have both sides of the magic.
Her smile evaporated in a way that took his breath with it.
That makes you an extremely dangerous person, Richard. You have both sides of the gift. You have the power to mend or destroy the veil. There are good people who, if they knew of your power, would kill you in a twinkling, for fear you might destroy us all, if not deliberately, by accident.
And you? Are you one of those?
If I were, I would not have helped your father get the Book of Counted Shadows. Your involvement stopped the immediate threat, but it also fed the gateway magic and chances greater danger in the future. It was a risk I had to take, because the consequences of not doing so would have been disaster. But if what has happened is not fixed, it will be greater disaster in the end.
What is the veil? Where is it? She reached out and tapped his forehead.
The veil is within those of us with magic. We are its custodians. That is why balance means so much to those with the gift. When the veil is torn, the balance is tipped. The further it tips, the more the veil tears. The Creator rules his domain, the Keeper his. The Keeper needs the Creator to feed him life. The Creator needs the Keeper to allow it to be renewed. The veil keeps the balance.
Her face was grim. This view would be considered blasphemy by many. They see the Keeper only as evil that must be destroyed, but to do so would ultimately accomplish the opposite, all life being swept away like a sandbar in a river flood.
Just for the sake of argument, what if I did have both kinds of magic? What is my power for?
Most wizards have a talent that leans in a particular direction. Some are healers. Some make things of magic. More rare are prophets. The most rare are war wizards. There has not been one born in over 3,000 years, until you.
Richard wiped his sweaty palms on his pant legs. I don't like the sound of that.
War wizard has two meanings which balance each other, as in all things magic. The first meaning is that they can tear the veil, bring destruction and death, war. And the second is that they have the magic needed to fight against the powers of the Keeper. Being a war wizard does not mean you are evil, Richard. Many who fight do so to protect those who are defenseless. It means you have the capacity to care enough to fight to defend the innocent.
Lest he who's born true can fight for life's bond. And that one is marked. He's the pebble in the pond, Richard quoted. She lifted an eyebrow.
For one who professes to scoff at prophecy, you seem to know some of the more pivotal passages. If I'm not entirely addled, I expect you have been marked.
Richard could feel the scar in his chest as he nodded. Are you saying that my life is already marked out? That I'm just meant to live it out as it has been preordained?
No, Richard. Life is not predetermined. The prophecies mean only that you have potential. You have the ability to influence events. That's why it is so important for you to learn. Of most importance is that you learn to accept yourself. If you do not do this, you will harm the most vital part of yourself, your free will. If you act without understanding, you could cast yourself into the chaos. I let you live when you were born because you have the potential for doing good. Within you is the hope of life. But until you truly accept both sides of your magic, you are a danger to every living thing.
Richard desperately wanted to change the subject. He felt as if the world were crushing him. What is the Stone of Tears? She gave a little shrug.
In the world of the dead, it exists as a force. In this world, it exists as an object with power representing that force. The Stone of Tears is like a weight that holds the Keeper at the infinite end of his world, where his influence, here, is diminished to the point of balance.
Then, if it's here, off him, he is freed from his prison.
If that were true, we would all be dead, hmm?
She lifted a questioning eyebrow, but Richard didn't say anything.
It's one of the seals that locks the Keeper beyond. There are others that still hold. Magic helps hold him back. For now. The Stone of Tears has the power, though, to destroy the balance, to tear the veil and free the Keeper, if it is used in this world by such as you, in the wrong way. You see, the stone has the power to banish any soul to the infinite depths of the underworld. But if it were used in that way, through hate, through selfishness, it would feed power to that side and destroy the veil. The veil can only be restored by one with a gift for both sides of the magic. The stone must be put back where it belongs. We must struggle to keep the other seals intact until the day when one such as you can restore this lock while there is still time. Meanwhile, the Keeper gains strength here. His minions struggle to break the other seals. There are other ways to free the Keeper.
Anne, are you sure about me? Maybe.
You proved it just tonight by walking through that shield. Our shields are made of additive magic. The only way for you to penetrate it was for your Han to use subtractive.
Maybe my Han, my additive magic, is just stronger.
When you came through the Valley of the Lost, you would have been drawn to the towers. To both towers, am I right?
I could have just come across them by accident. She let out a tired sigh.
The towers were created by wizards who had both kinds of power. In the White Tower there is white sand, sorcerer's sand. I doubt you would have taken any. That doesn't prove anything, and what is sorcerer's sand?
Sorcerer's sand is extremely valuable, nearly priceless. It is only gathered by chance happenings across the tower. Sorcerer's sand is the crystallized bones of the wizards who gave their life into the towers. It's a sort of distilled magic. It gives power to spells drawn with it, good and evil. The proper spell drawn in white sorcerer's sand can invoke the keeper.
You took, instead, some of the black sand, did you not?
Well, yes, I just wanted a little bit, that's all. She nodded.
Just a little bit. Richard, no wizard since the towers were built, has been able to gather any black sorcerer's sand. It cannot be taken from a tower by any but those with subtractive magic. Guard that black sand with your life. It's more valuable than you can imagine.
Why? What will it do?
Black sorcerer's sand is the counter to the white. They nullify each other. The black, even one grain of it, will contaminate a spell drawn to invoke the keeper. It will destroy the spell. A spoonful of it is a weapon worth kingdoms.
Still, he said, it could just be that
the last wizards born with both kinds of magic invested the palace of the prophets with their magic. The prophets of that time knew one would be born again with both sides of the magic, a war wizard. And so they created two, the Hagen Woods and the Mriswith. One born with the subtractive magic would be drawn to that place, drawn to do battle there. The collar keeps the additive gift from killing you. The Hagen Woods provide an outlet for the other side of your power. It is something the sisters cannot provide.
But I used the Sword of Truth. His voice sounded to him like a plea into a gale. It was the sword.
The Sword of Truth was also created by wizards with the gift for both sides of the magic. Only one born the same could bring out the full range of its magic. Only you can use the sword to its full potential. And you have not done so yet. It is an aid to you, but even so, you do not need it to kill the Mriswith. Your gift is enough. If you do not believe me, leave your sword and go into the Hagen Woods with just your knife. You will still kill the Mriswith.
Others have used this blade. They didn't even have the gift, much less subtractive magic.
They were not truly using the sword's magic. The blade was made for you. It's an aid, much as prophecy is an aid, much as the Mriswith are an aid, sent down through time.
I don't think I could be one of these war wizards.
Do you eat meat?
What does that have to do with anything?
You are a child of balance. Wizards must balance themselves, the things they do, their power. War wizards rarely eat meat. Their abstinence is a balance for the killing they sometimes must do.
I'm sorry, Anne, but I just can't believe I have subtractive magic.
That's why you are in such danger. Every time you encounter magic, your Han learns more about how to protect you, to serve you, but you are not aware that it is learning. The Radahan helps it grow, though you're not aware of the process. You do things without knowing the importance or the reason, like when you were drawn to the black sorcerer's sand and took it, or when you took the round skrin bone from Addy.
Richard's brow pulled together. You know Addy, too?
Yes. She helped your father and me get through the pass so we could retrieve the Book of Counted Shadows.
What round bone are you talking about?
Richard saw the slightest twitch of alarm in her eyes. Addy had a round bone, carved all over with beasts. It's an object of great power. Your subtractive magic would have drawn you to it.
Richard remembered seeing the round bone on a high shelf.
I saw such a thing at her house, but I didn't take it. I wouldn't take something that didn't belong to me. Maybe that means I don't really have subtractive magic.
She straightened.
No, you noticed it. The fact that you didn't take it means only that since you did not have the Radahan on yet, your power had not developed enough to draw you to the skrin bone, the way it drew you to the black sand.
Richard hesitated. Is this some kind of problem?
She smiled. It looked forced to him. No, Addy would protect that bone with her life. She knows how important it is. You can recover it in the future.
What does it do?
It helps protect the veil.
When used by a war wizard like you with both powers, it invokes the Skryn. The Skryn are a force that helps keep the world separated. You might say they are the guardians of the boundary between worlds.
What if the wrong person got their hands on it, a person wishing to help the Keeper?
She pulled on his shirt, urging him up.
You worry too much, Richard. I have work to do. You must leave me to it now. Do your best, child, and study. Learn to touch your Han to get control of it. You must learn if you are to be of any help to the Creator.
Richard turned back to her. She was staring off. Anne, why does the Keeper want the world of the living? What will it gain him? What is the purpose? Her answer came in a soft, distant voice.
Death is the antithesis of life. The Keeper exists to consume the living. His hatred of life has no bounds. His hatred is as eternal as his prison of death.
Chapter 62. Richard was in a world of his own as he headed for the stone bridge. He had been cloistered in his room for days, thinking. When the sisters came to give him his lessons, he put in only a half-hearted effort. He now feared he just might touch his Han. Warren was busy day and night in the vaults checking what Richard had told him and looking for more information. There had to be at least some truth to what the prelate had told him. Why else would the Keeper not yet have used the gateway if he could? He needed to go for a walk. He felt as if his head were about to burst. He just wanted to be away from the palace for a while. Pasha suddenly appeared at his side.
I've been looking for you.
He stared ahead as he walked. Why?
I just wanted to be with you.
Well, I'm going for a walk in the country.
She shrugged. I wouldn't mind a walk. May I come along?
Richard looked over. She was in her wispy maroon dress, the one with the V-shaped neckline. The day was chilly. At least she had on a useful-looking violet cloak. She was wearing big gold loop earrings. Her belt matched her necklace, with the same kind of gold medallions. She looked alluring in the outfit, but they weren't exactly hiking in the country clothes. Are you wearing those useless slippers?
She held a foot out to show him her tooled leather boots. I had them made special, just so I could go for walks with you.
Made special, he grumbled to himself. Richard remembered how hurt she had been that time he had told her that the blue dress didn't become her. He didn't want to hurt her feelings by sending her away. She was only trying to please him. Maybe, he thought, the company of a smiling face would do him good.
Well, all right, then. I guess you can come along as you don't think I'm going to entertain you in conversation.
She grinned and took his arm.
I'd be happy just to walk with you.
At least having Pasha on his arm kept most of the women away from him as they passed through the city. The ones who did boldly approach